This is Brother Bedford, and welcome to Conversations with Black Millionaire Entrepreneurs, where we work very hard to bring you the best of the best, the entrepreneurs who not only talk the talk, but have really walked the walk and have been a pristine example for so many of us to really try to glean from their knowledge, their wisdom, and their understanding on what it truly takes to become a successful entrepreneur. So we work hard to do that, to bring you those individuals, and today is no exception. I'm extremely excited. I'm always excited to bring you successful entrepreneurs and business builders, but today I've been anticipating this conversation for quite some time because I've been observing Della Toro for years, looking from the outside in, and I've watched him. I normally try to share with all of the entrepreneurs or budding entrepreneurs how to discover your gift, how to cultivate your gift, and then how to run with your gift. And Della Toro is the epitome of that. He epitomizes discovering your gift, cultivating and developing your gift, and now he's taking that gift and he is spreading it all over the world. I mean, he was recently named or ranked number 32 in the world of best motivational speakers. I mean, we're not talking about Florida, Detroit, Atlanta. We're talking about in the entire world. He's authored over 6 books, and he's developed dozens of courses on personal growth and professional development, and he also hosts events. I mean, this gentleman has his hand in everything. He travels the globe empowering diverse audiences with his hard-hitting and experiential, high-energy, content-rich, and believe me, it is paradigm shifting, his keynotes, his seminars, and he is one of the best in peak performance to help organizations take themselves, their professions, to the next level. So without further delay, I want to bring to you and welcome you, brother, again. I'm extremely excited to have this conversation with Mr. Della Toro. I mean, listen to the name, Della Toro McNeil. So thank you for joining me this morning, dear brother.
Brother Bedford, man, it's a tremendous joy and honor to be with you, man, and I'm sure you can hear the smile in my voice, brother, because, man, this is an honor and a treat. As you are a fan of myself, man, I have been a big fan of you and your work and the impact that you make in our community and around the world. It is an honor to get a chance to share with everybody who's listening right now some concepts and principles and strategies, techniques that we as young, successful millionaire entrepreneurs are using to not only create income, but to create influence and impact. And I think that's what's really powerful.
No, man, that is great. Now, I could sit here and read all of the accolades and awards where you've been featured, the companies you've worked with. I would be here for the next 30 minutes doing that. So to kind of shorten this up, can you just tell us, who is Della Toro McNeil?
Man, let me just be straight up with you, man. Della Toro is a cornbread, man. I am a down-home, humble cat, man, born and raised in Tampa. I still live in the same city that I was born and raised in, to be honest with you. I love something that we shared earlier. You know, I was fortunate, and I really call myself favored and blessed to have tapped into what I believe my God-inspired purpose and passion was in life at a rather early age. And I was able to tap into that, figure it out, commit to it, cultivate it, really, really go deep in that space and begin to start sharing that message with the world. But it came, you know, I share people with all the time. There's two types of entrepreneurs. There are necessity entrepreneurs, and then there are choice entrepreneurs. There are entrepreneurs who got into business by choice. They made a decision. It was a calculated decision. You know, they spent years working in corporate America or years in the military or years in this or years in that. Stay-at-home mom, stay-at-home parent, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then they made a conscious choice, a deliberate choice to start a business, a deliberate choice. They saved up money. Then they opened a franchise. They did this. It was a very calculated, well-thought-out choice to be an entrepreneur. That's not my story. I was actually a necessity entrepreneur, meaning I had no choice but to take a chance on my gifts and talents, because born and raised in a Christian home, my mom and dad, great individuals, incredible role models and mentors in their own right, but I wasn't raised in the ghetto, but I wasn't raised in the suburbs either. I was middle class. I was raised middle class, hardworking parents, extremely hardworking parents, very, very diligent about work ethic, and that's a word that we don't hear anymore, Brother Bedford. I mean, how often do you hear people talking about work ethic today? And I was raised by parents who worked diligently. My father, who I'm named after, was paralyzed in the Vietnam War fighting for you and I, and paralyzed from the waist down. And my dad could have sat back on a government check his entire life, and the government would have taken care of him. But he decided to literally get back up off of his setback, off of his adversity, off of his life-changing, you know, situation that happened in Vietnam. And he decided to not only allow himself to be rehabilitated physically, but he also decided to lead the organization, the same organization that rehabilitated him. So my dad actually climbed the ranks of becoming the national director of the Paralyzed Veterans Association of America. Wow. Which is huge. I mean, so he goes from so that taught me a ton, just learning and gleaning, even at a distance, from him about how to overcome adversity, overcome hard times, overcome difficult situations. And I learned the importance of a good education. I learned the importance of being articulate. My dad was a deacon in church, so I learned the importance of just being able to, really be a good person. I learned that from my dad. And to be a good leader. And then for my mother, oh my gosh, my mom was a Sunday school teacher. She was an educator. She taught English. She also, interestingly enough, worked in banking for a few years, and she was also a probation officer for a few years. My mom had several jobs because she raised us predominantly by herself as a single parent. So you know how that goes. You know, she, you know, would hop from job to job to try to make sure her boys were taken care of. But I learned work ethic, Brother Bedford. If that was one thing I could tell you I learned from both my parents, is I saw their diligence in going out and earning money. But I'm a first-generation entrepreneur because my mom nor my dad ever owned a business. They always were 9-to-5 employees, that kind of a thing. But they worked very hard, and they raised me in a Christian home. Now, because my mom and dad split when I was 2, I did have some academic challenges. So in 6th grade, they put me in a class full of all at-risk kids. And interestingly enough, this story that I'm sharing with you now is a really powerful story. I didn't know that my story would become known around the world, but Joel Osteen has actually used my story in one of his sermons that he preached, which aired to 20 million households repeatedly back in 2013 when he shared it in a sermon called Tell People What They Can't Become. So my 6th grade teacher was my first African-American teacher. And on the first day of class, she said, "Son, you're not a youth at risk. I know you're in an at-risk class, but you're not a youth at risk. You're a youth at promise." Mm-hmm. And she said, "I'm not just going to teach you this year. I'm going to actually mentor you." And so she said, at recess, instead of you having an hour to play with all your friends, you're going to have 30 minutes to play with them, and you're going to spend the other 30 minutes sitting right next to me, and I'm going to teach you about life. And Miss Diane Williams changed my life that year. In that one year, she changed my life. And she's still alive. She's still living. She's still kicking. She's still doing great. I've had her come to a various number of speaking engagements. I've written about her in my books. And I think when we go up to military people, we need to shake their hand and say thank you for your service. But I think when we go up to educators, Brother Bedford, we should shake their hand and say thank you for your impact. Absolutely. Because I think every single educator – and I get chill bumps every time I talk about it. I think every single person that dedicates themselves to educating others is creating impact. They're making a commitment to impact. And if that was one thing, if you're taking notes, make a commitment. If you really want to be a 7-figure, 8-figure entrepreneur, make a commitment right now that whatever you do, you're committed to impact. Because one of the things that I think is we're sometimes over-focused on, Brother Bedford, is we're focused on the income. And I think the income is great. But I believe that you can make a difference and a dollar at the same time. That's what one of my mentors, John Maxwell, teaches, the ability to make a difference and a dollar simultaneously. And I believe that if you commit your life to making a difference, making a dollar is not that hard. And so I really believe that if we focus on impact, How do I impact customers better? How do I impact my client more? How do I impact this world for the good? How do I impact my generation? How do I impact my organization? If you get up every day and you answer that question with your action, what you're committed to doing to create impact, I think the income will automatically be a direct result of that. So just to kind of continue with my story real quick, so when Ms. Diane Williams kind of relabeled my life in the sixth grade, I didn't have any more academic challenges. And I was able to kind of climb the ranks academically, do pretty good in school. And the moment I turned 14 years old, I didn't ask my mom for a big party. I didn't ask her for a big birthday cake. I didn't ask my mom for a nice outfit. I asked my mom to, 3 weeks before my 14th birthday, I asked my mom to take me into a local grocery store so I could fill out an application so that I would be approved, because in Florida you can't work till you're 14. But I asked her to send me in. Watch this, Brother Bedford. I asked her to come with me 3 weeks before my 14th birthday to fill out the application so that that way I would be approved so that I could start my first day of work on my 14th birthday. And the grocery store chain accepted my application based on my birthday. I went in, did the interview, whatever, whatever. And on my 14th birthday, the day I turned 14, happened to be a Saturday, was my first day working, because I wanted the very first day that I was old enough to, I wanted to begin the process of developing my work ethic. You know, back then, you know, I was a big fan of Boyz II Men and, you know, the Fat Boys and, Kid and Play. And, you know, and back then, you know, the gold chains with your name on them was real popular.
Right.
You'd have your own, you know. And so my thing was I wanted to be able to have my own little gold chain with my name on it so that when I had a girlfriend, I could give her my you know. I wanted to be able to go to the movies without asking my mom for money. I wanted to be able to do certain things without having to ask my mom, because I already saw how hard she was working.
Right.
My dad was traveling extensively doing what he was doing with the PBA, and he had another family and, you know, was leading that family well. And my mom had remarried, so, you know, I had a stepfather, all that stuff. But I just wanted to be able to work. And to be honest with you, man, you know, there was challenges even with my stepfather. You know, he was abusive, and so my mom had to. I saw my mom go through a lot of physical abuse in the home, and I saw a dichotomy. I think one of the things that people say about me, Brother Bedford, when they hear me speak or present, they say, "Man, you're so real, you're so raw." And what people don't understand is that when I grew up, Brother Bedford, I was raised in a home where I saw a lot of facades. What I mean by that was, at that time, my stepdad was a deacon in the church. So he, you know, would teach Sunday school and, you know, raise hymns and all that stuff. But at home, and he was also the treasurer of the church, but at home, he was very physically abusive to my mom. He drank, he smoked, blah, 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 blah. So there was this dichotomy between who he really was and who he portrayed himself to be in the church world. And so that was difficult for me to process. And so I needed an outlet, because I couldn't stand being at home. So that was another reason why I wanted to work, because I correlated in my mind that if I could be self-sufficient and independent, I'd be less of a burden on my mother, and that would be one less thing she had to worry about while she was trying to put up with being this deaconess who supports this guy who's got all these, you know, all this baggage, and we all have stuff, so I'm not judging him. What I'm saying is it just created a very challenging home life. So I excelled in school and I excelled in work as an outlet, if you will, and that actually helped cultivate a lot of skills. See, I believe as an entrepreneur, honestly, you need to have 3 to 4 times the work ethic of a 9-to-5er if you really want to be a successful entrepreneur. And I'm not exaggerating. I think you need to have 3 to 4 times the work ethic to be an entrepreneur than you do to work for someone else. Because I think most people, and this is the first time I've ever said that in human history. So this conversation is really bringing some interesting things out. And I teach entrepreneurship all the time, but I really believe that, Brother Bedford, because think about it, you know, and this is one thing I share a lot, and I teach it in Caught Between, and those of you who are listening, if you're interested in what I could teach you about everything that I'm talking about right now, If you'll do me a favor and visit my website, one of my websites, which is called CaughtBetweenADreamAndAJob.com. It's called CaughtBetweenADreamAndAJob.com. You can learn all about, I've got a wonderful resource that will help you. It's a home study course and a book that will transform your entire life and take you out of your 9-to-5 and take you into entrepreneurship very powerfully and profoundly. But one of the things that I realized, Brother Bedford, is that most people don't succeed in entrepreneurship because they don't know how to crack the whip on themselves. Anytime someone comes up to me and says, I need to start my own business because I can't work for somebody, I say, well, you're not going to be in business long.
Right.
And the reason why I say that, Brother Bedford, is because the truth is, if you come into entrepreneurship with that attitude, right, I can't work for nobody else. You know what I'm saying? Right. What you're saying is you can't even appreciate the baby steps you needed to take to develop enough work ethic in order to be able to run your own organization. See, I believe that every job that we have before we take on our own business is teaching us something that we need in our business. So if you can't crack the whip on yourself, you know, when you're working for somebody else, what happens when that pressure of them cracking the whip on you is not there?
Right. That's profound.
So, you know, I share that to say, you know, when I was growing up, I learned those traits at the age of 14, you know, and it was powerful for me. So I want to encourage everybody who had a challenging childhood, a rough childhood, and to give my stepfather credit. I mean, he lost his son in a terrible car accident. And I think what my stepdad did was he took all that anger from being in the military and things not working out the way he wanted and losing his son and the divorce and all the stuff. He just took that anger out on my mom and my brother and I, who could never be the son that he lost in a car accident. We never could replace his son. So at the end of the day, hurting people hurt people. I share this backstory with you because, again, you said, Del Toro, give us the backstory. I mean, anybody can go on Google and see all the great stuff you do. But part of the backstory is people don't understand the pain, the adversity, the hardship that goes into being successful. And I have not met one person all around the world who is successful without a significant price, without a significant cost. And if you were to ask every dressed-up successful person to take off their jacket or their St. John dress, you will see scars. You'll see wounds. You'll see Band-Aids that we all have, that we all carry, that we all struggle with. And so mine came at an early age. And so I think the catalyst for me, Brother Bedford, for becoming successful as an entrepreneur later on really began at age 14. You know, it started there for me, and dealing with some of those challenges at home and watching my mom be a rock star mom in spite of all of that, and still work and still teach Sunday school and still speak. And my mom, when I was 5, you know, my mom was an articulator, my mom used to narrate gospel plays and productions. So my mom had an exquisite voice. And so she taught me about diction and articulation and pronunciation. My after school program was going to my mom's play rehearsals. And hearing my mom interact with all these people who were acting and producing, and they would get off their jobs and they would go and they would practice these plays, and then I'd watch them go on tour, and my mom would, you know, go to prisons, and my mom was known for just bringing people together and just being a really, really amazing person. And people would always say in our church or in our community, they said, man, if you ever want to hear somebody speak, listen to Olivia speak. And so I was raised in that environment. I get chill bumps just kind of she's thinking about it. And so it's funny, you know, where I'm at now, you know, although my mom was not an entrepreneur, my dad was not an entrepreneur, they both were grooming me with something that every entrepreneur needs, which is work ethic. And so I thank them and I credit them both very highly for that. But after I came out of that little slump or whatever, and I kind of, you know, I went to high school and got my bachelor's and master, I got my diploma, and I went into Florida State University early, and I went into Florida State at like age 17, I didn't have any college credits going in, not like today. You know, today kids can go to college with a 5.0 GPA, a 6.8 GPA, or all that stuff. You know, I didn't have all that going for me. I didn't have any pre-advanced college courses to my credit, but I had hustle. I had work ethic. And so I went to college and I got my bachelor's and my master's degree with honors in 5 years with a 4.0 and no debt. And I was serious. I took that same work ethic that I had at 14 and I cultivated over the years, and I took that straight into college. And I didn't want my mom to have a lot of college debt bills, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I got a little bit of money for college from my dad's GI Bill, but it wasn't much. I mean, it sure as heck didn't cover a lot, but it helped with books and, you know, some room and board expenses. But I made a decision going into college that I was going to hustle. I was going to work my way through school. So that way my mom didn't have to have extra bills and blah, 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 blah. My stepdad had died my senior year in high school. So my mom was on her own again at that point at a very expensive time, because now my older brother was in college at USF and I was now in college at Florida State. So two kids in college and my mom's a single mom again. Wow. It just created a really strong work ethic within me again to hustle. So, I mean, I worked my way through school, and when I use the word hustle, it's a very positive word. It means being diligent about being about your business and making things happen. So I did that all the way through school, and then I got my first corporate job fresh out of college. I signed a contract to work with one of the top five global consulting firms, a company called Anderson Consulting at the time. It's now called Accenture. And so I come out with a master's degree at 21 years old. With, you know, 21 and a half, I was almost 22. And I had developed incredible mentors in college. And a lot of my greatest professors in college have become mentors to me and taught me a lot. My greatest college mentor was an African American gentleman by the name of Dr. Lee Jones, who is still an itinerant speaker on the circuit today. Him and another gentleman by the name of Dr. Naeem Akbar were incredible African American male mentors to me while I was in college at Florida State. Dr. Akbar was my African-American studies teacher and became a mentor to me because Dr. Akbar was the mentor to my mentor, who was Dr. Lee Jones. At the time, Dr. Jones was 33 years old. He had a bachelor's, two master's, and a PhD. He wore a suit and a bow tie to work every day. He was the associate dean for the College of Education at Florida State, and he was an itinerant speaker. So he was an entrepreneur, and he was also, you know, employed. It was, or what I would call an intrapreneur, you know, and at the university. And so he taught me how to do both. So I was like, wow. And so I did whatever. I heard him speak as a freshman, and after I heard him speak, I was hooked. And I said, whatever I got to do to stay around Dr. Jones, I'm going to do it. And so, that's another footnote to everybody who's listening to this right now. When you hear, I believe God sends us voices that we are supposed to trust. I believe that when the student is ready, the teacher shows up. So I think when you're fortunate enough to be in the company of a person who is an incredible teacher, an incredible mentor, someone who's done something that you aspire to do, I think if you're fortunate enough, because you know how many people around the world are never even fortunate enough to That's even right. be in the same room as somebody that they aspire to be like. Mm-hmm. So when you get a chance to be in the same room with somebody that you aspire to be like, do whatever it takes to stay around them. Whatever it takes to stay around them. When you're blessed enough to find that teacher, that mentor, that sage, that coach, you know, that leader, that guru that is assigned to your life, you know, do whatever it takes to stay around them. You've done that with Dr. George Frazier. You've done that with so many people. I've done that with Les Brown and Dr. Willie Jolly and Tony Robbins and Dr. John Maxwell and Dr. Stephen Covey before he passed and Zig Ziglar before he passed. You know, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Brother Bedford, but tell me one person you've interviewed that's kicking butt and taking names as an entrepreneur that cannot tell you at least two or three stories of the mentors that cultivated them to be who they are.
Not one.
I wasn't even on your interviews, but I guarantee you, here's five things I know to be 1,000,000% true of every person you've ever interviewed. Number one, they hustle. They work hard. They got a strong work ethic. And you can start a business, but you can't stay in business if you don't have work ethic, if you don't have hustle. Number two, they had mentors. And they did what their mentors told them to do. They paid the price. Some mentors great, some mentors maybe not so great. But they learned the lessons that they needed to learn, and they were cultivated by someone who had went before them. Three, they paid a significant price in their personal lives to be who they are, whether it was financial, having to start over a couple different times, whether it was marital, having different relationships, or having spiritual challenges, or whatever. They went through some personal challenges in order to be successful. Number four, they found something and they were willing to stick to that thing. I say it like this, stick to, be like a stamp, stick to one thing until it delivers. They found something that they were really, really incredible at and they cultivated it. They sat on that egg until it hatched. They didn't sit on it for 10 minutes. They didn't sit on it until something else looked more appealing. They sat on that thing until it manifested. Another thing that they did was they built a team. They built people around them to cultivate them, to grow them, to nurture them. I'd probably say number six is they have a ferocious appetite for personal and professional growth and development. They've got books, they've got tapes, they've got libraries. Not only do they create resources, but they absorb and they digest resources like it's nobody's business. Now, I've not been on the majority, I've not been on any of your interviews, but those are just six things that I know universally have to be true. Brother, would you agree with that or not?
Oh, absolutely true. I mean, you've hit each nail on the head, and I mean very precise, even in your articulation of the language. It's a universal principle that if you're going to be successful doing what it is that we do or attempting to do what it is that we do, you have to begin to incorporate these principles, these traits, and these characteristics into your life. You're absolutely correct.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, what I ended up doing is, you know, developing those traits in college, came out, sat under Dr. Jones, sat under Dr. Brenda Spencer, learned from these incredible mentors, men and women who were putting my life in college, and then came out and started working in Anderson, but I was only working there for a year. Now, I knew I wanted to one day be a speaker, but I worked there for a year because all of a sudden Anderson, Arthur Anderson split, and I was 1 year new to the company, which means everybody in the training and development department got let go.
Wow.
So I went from 50 grand to nothing in a day, and I had just bought my first house. So now I'm 22 with my first townhouse, and I can't even afford it. Right. And this was right around September 11th window. The travel industry went through the floor. Mm-hmm. The job market, the economy went through the floor when September 11th happened. I mean, everything just went haywire. I was like, what in the world? So I lost my first house. So at 22 years old, I get my first ding on my credit report, my personal credit report.
Right.
Now, I was able to sell the house to someone before the house went to foreclosure, but I had to move out of my first house that I built from the ground up, sell it, and move into an apartment. But at that same time, I began to start birthing my dream. I made a decision. I was going to join Toastmasters. I was going to stay active in Toastmasters. I was going to speak for every club that would listen. I spoke for chicken dinners, fish dinners. I didn't care what it was. I did whatever it took. I spoke for as many organizations as I could, and I took a job at the University of South Florida here in Tampa for 2 years. And while I was at USF, I was a faculty and staff trainer, and they also asked me what I teach, and I said, what subject? They said, public speaking. So watch this, Brother Bedford. 2 years out of college, I'm now teaching at the college level.
Right.
And then they let me teach for one semester, and they said, we want you to stop teaching. I said, what did I do wrong? They said, nothing. They said, we want to put you in the training room so you can teach our faculty and staff how to do what you're doing in the classroom. I said, what? So now 3 years after college, I'm teaching those that teach college students.
Wow.
I'm 23. And so I'm like, okay, obviously, God, you're showing me something here. So I was making $40,000 a year at USF, and I was speaking on the side. And I said, God, if this is really what you want me to do, I need you to match my income. So that first year that I got really, really serious about it, which was 2001, I made $43,000 as an entrepreneur while I made $40,000 at the university.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, whoa. I'm like, okay, this is doable. It's possible. And so when I went into the following year, 2002, I said, okay, God, if this is really going to take off, I need you to double my income so that I don't have to be at the university anymore. Mm-hmm. So that second year, my set of goals to make $80,000 on nights and weekends, speaking at conferences and events, and I was a little dog, so I was just doing breakout sessions, you know, little stuff like that. I mean, even you know, I was just a little dog, but I was hungry, you know.
Right.
And so that second year, I made $83,000 that second year on the side. And this is another thing that I'm going to say to everybody who's listening. If you currently work a job and you have a dream to do something entrepreneurial, and this is what my Caught Between a Dream and a Job system teaches you, so please right now visit caughtbetweenadreamandajob.com, caughtbetweenadreamandajob.com. There's an incredible system on that website that you've got to order for yourself. We've done a full national infomercial, a PBS special level infomercial around this whole concept that I think you'll love, and you can learn more about it on that website as well. But if you really believe that you're meant to do entrepreneurship, I would encourage you, while you're taking those steps towards becoming an entrepreneur, lay a good financial foundation for yourself before you step out there. Because at the end of the day, there are certain things you guys got to understand, especially newer entrepreneurs. The first 2 years of your business don't even count. It's like you need two years. You being in business, you need at least 2 years of business proof before you can financially qualify for anything. You need 2 years of business tax returns.
At least,
you need,
yeah, right.
That's at the minimum,
right,
for anybody to even take your business seriously. So don't try to qualify for a car or a credit card or a house or anything, you know,
right,
when you just start out a business, because they're not going to take your business income seriously. You need at least 2 years of proof that this is a viable option.
Sure.
So I always encourage people who are jumping into the game, Brother Bedford, to really kind of work that entrepreneurial dream on the side while they're building while they're still working their job. And so that's what I did. I stayed at my job and I got, so think about it. So that year I made $40,000 as a salary, and then I made $83,000, $41,000, because I got a $1,000 raise. And then I made $83,000 on nights and weekends speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And
before
that's
you go,
what I knew.
Before you move, because you're getting ready to say, I know you said that's when you knew, but you, when you left college, going into your first corporate job, had you already made a decision that you wanted to be a professional speaker, or when did you make that decision? When did it become apparent to you that you wanted to go into this arena of professional speaking?
Great question. So when I was in, before I became a speaker, I wanted to be a member of Boyz II Men. People said I looked like them. People said I sang like them. And I had the full lips, you know. I had the real full lips.
I was the same size
in high school as they are right now. I had to grow into these soup coolers. So, Brother Bedford, I had two boy bands, you know. So one of the things that I also did when I was young is because I loved to sing. My mom was in the choir, and so, you know, I loved singing. So when I wasn't at her play rehearsals, I was at choir rehearsals. So I was always around harmony. So, when Boyz II Men came out, they were like almost Jesus to me. I just love those guys.
Yeah.
So, I developed some boy bands, and so performing arts was a big thing for me. That was another outlet. So when I wasn't at work bagging groceries or whatever, when I was in school, I was involved in organizations that were aligned with performing arts. For example, choir, show choir, concert choir, chamber choir. All these other things that involve music. I never played an instrument, but I always was able to sing. So, and I was a bass singer at that, which is a very unique skill set. So my passion for the arts kind of came at an early age as well. But my speaking passion came from always admiring preachers who would come into town, guest preachers, my own pastor, whatever. And I always admired their ability to move a crowd and to impact people with what they said, from Dr. King to just, you name it. But I never really felt like I was supposed to pastor a church. So I was like, what do people who can speak but they don't pastor churches do? That was always a question in my head.
Right.
And so I would start seeing these infomercials with this guy named Tony Robbins, this white guy with big teeth who was really tall. And I'm like, okay, who is this guy? And so I would just be intrigued by what he said. And then I would start studying, you know, this Les Brown guy, and I'd buy some CDs, and I'd start, and then I picked up Zig Ziglar. And you know how it is, once you hear one speaker in the personal development space, at that time it was like, okay, who else is out there? And so I began to start listening to, you know, Wayne Dyer and Dennis Waitley and Dennis Kimbrough. And I was just start listening to these people. And then because when I was in college, you know, Dr. Jones, who was a speaker, you know, I would go in his library and I'd go to his house and see all the people that he studied. And so I'm like, wow. And so I knew in college that I wanted to be a speaker. I thought that I wasn't going to be a speaker until I was in my mid to late 30s. I thought I would start speaking in my mid to late 30s because I was going to have a corporate career first and all that other stuff. Because Zig Ziglar, before he became a speaker, sold cookware. Les Brown, before he became a speaker, was a politician and he was a radio disc jockey. Maya Angelou was a professor. Stephen Covey was a college professor before he went full time. Willie Jolly was a nightclub singer and a jazz singer and worked at a youth detention program for a youth coordinator position. So a lot of the people that I aspired to be like, Tony Robbins, worked in sales for Jim Rohn before he went full time. So a lot of people that I admired had careers in something else before they went into speaking. So I thought, sure, that was going to be my path as well. Wrong again. So that's when, again, like we started this conversation with this whole notion of the necessity of entrepreneur, and that's really what it was that pushed me to that next level.
That's great.
So I realized it at an early age, but it clicked, and so I began to start studying the industry when I was in high school and college. And I remember in college, so I went to Florida State, which is in Tallahassee. Tallahassee is 3.5 hours away from Tampa. So every single time I would go up to college or come back home for a weekend or come back home for spring break or trips or vacation, any of that stuff, I would always be listening to personal development in the car. I wasn't listening to, I mean, I had a couple of my groups that I would listen to, like, you know, Boyz II Men or, you know, whatever, forever. But I'd only listen to that for like an hour. And then the other 2.5 hours, I'd be listening to a favorite speaker of mine. So I put that information in me at an early age. You know what I mean?
Which is totally different. And that's why I asked, because you started this career, again, as you said, out of necessity, but it was a career that was started, especially in the speaking space, relatively young. I mean, 22, 23, that's fairly young to be a professional speaker. And then also making the type of money that you were making on the side, which, again, I love your approach to entrepreneurship. I never really heard it put that way when you talked about work ethic. That's not normally one of the principles or the starting blocks that you hear entrepreneurs talk about. You know, it's always obviously that we know that work, I guess in their speeches it's inherent. You kind of think about it, but the way that you framed it, I mean, that was really the engine for you to do everything that you're doing. And your work ethic really shaped everything. It was like your work ethic forged this career.
You know, absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, here it is. You're making this type of money. Because I know I want to ask you a couple other questions. You're speaking now, and you're working your job, and you're making the type of money that you made. So now those who are listening will say, well, you know, that sounds pretty good. Del Toro didn't have it all bad. He spoke about some personal challenges before speaking and his life, but then once he got going, it was gravy. And I know that that's not the case. So what were the challenges that you began to face? What would you say is one of the biggest challenges that you faced once you crossed over that corporate threshold into the arena of professional speaking and entrepreneurship? What were one of the challenges that you faced after that year two of $83,000? Now you're in it. I'm sure there were some other challenges that came up.
Well, again, you know, so once I doubled my income, yeah, things were doing better. But just to be honest with you, you know, picking the ideal life partner was a challenge because, you know, none of this stuff comes with a manual. So it's like, you know, you date and you fall in love and you meet people or whatever. And so, you know, I mean, I've tried. I've tried marriage, you know, a couple times and learned a lot of lessons, you know, about, and, you know, great people, just not an ideal fit for me, you know, because sometimes you marry a person for where you are at the time, not knowing the meteoric, ascension that you're getting ready to go through. And if you're not attached to the right person who can handle that climb, you worked at that season, but not long term. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I've I've gone through, you know, relationship ups and downs. Even from the standpoint of, you know, the fear of going full time, because there's a lot of people listening right now who are, you're pursuing your entrepreneurship thing part time, but you haven't let go of your job. I know what it's like to have to leave the security of that 40 grand and be 100% in the game and hoping that those clients that I built up would stay in a speaking industry that was continuing to grow and expand and become a little bit more complex. So I know what it feels like to have that fear of, am I good enough to go full time and have to push through everything in order to believe in myself enough to bet on myself, to bet on black that I could make it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And do that. And that's a big thing, because, and I want to pause right there, because that's a huge piece. I think a lot of people struggle with that, with betting on themselves. We bet on stocks, we bet on retirement accounts, mutual funds, separate accounts, 401ks, global index annuity fund. I mean, we bet on all kind of stuff, but it's tough to bet on yourself. And to believe with mathematical exactitude that you will succeed.
That's so when you made that jump, I know you're saying, again, having the right partner that could share in that journey with you, and that's a challenge in and of itself. But when you decided and you believed in yourself, what was the impetus for you to cut the job loose?
Well, the impetus was I couldn't perform. My thing is this: be excellent until you can no longer be excellent. And what I mean by that is I believe in multiple streams of income to a degree. I believe you should have multiple streams of income as long as you can be excellent in those streams. But the moment that your excellence begins to wane, you need to cut it. For example, I was working my job at USF and I was working my speaking career. And once my speaking career hit about 80 grand, I began to start watching my performance at the university begin to suffer. I couldn't do both simultaneously anymore.
Right.
So in order to grow the dream, I had to let go of the job. So I said, okay, you know, Lord, if you let me double my income by the end of that year, I'll leave. So by that December, you know, when I did my taxes, I had hit the $83,000 like I told you about. And so I said, okay, you answered my prayer. I can still stay at the university because I was still doing a great job. They loved me there. And this is why we got to go back to Jim Collins' book, From Good to Great. Sometimes you got to be willing to leave the good to go for the great.
That's great.
You have to be, and I mean, they loved me at the university. If I wanted to, I could still be there. But that was not the long-term plan. So I knew that I could no longer do that job and grow my business at the level that it was growing. I had to let one go. So I had to take that leap of faith. And I tell people all the time, you talk about a leap of faith. Entrepreneurship is the greatest. You will never pray harder. If you're a believer and you want to learn how to develop a better relationship with God,
Right. You know, it's funny that you say that, because I tell people all the time, I believe one of the greatest exercises in personal growth and development is starting your business. All of the things that you need to grow personally, you will run into it when you're starting your own business.
You will. Everything. So that was it for me. And so I had great mentors in my life, Dr. Dolly, Les Brown, others. And so I was running my numbers by them and what I was doing. And Mark Victor Hansen was even a great influence in my life at that time. So I was ready, you know, and so I was like, okay, I had 2 years of running both the business and the job. So I was like, okay, well, now it's time for me. I'd written some books by that time. I'd developed some courses. And so I had what it took to step out there. And that's what I want to encourage everybody to do. Don't just step out on your dream willy-nilly. Don't just step out on your entrepreneurial vision half-cocked. Have stuff ready. Have clients in the queue. Have your customer relationship management, your database set up. I mean, have things in order. Don't just step out there. You know what I'm saying? Literally, you know, and I teach this stuff in Caught Between a Dream and a Job, so make sure you visit that website. But have your stuff in order when you step out there. Now, it doesn't have to be perfect, but it should be in order. I believe everything should be done decently and in order. So have your stuff in order so that way You're not floundering, because a lot of people, I mean, we all know this. Mark Michael Gerber's book teaches this. You know, the e-myth, you know, why 85% of small businesses fail and how yours doesn't have to, you know. And at the end of the day, you want to make sure that your business makes it past that one-year mark, makes it past the three-year mark, makes it past the five-year mark, makes it past the 10-year mark, you know. That's a big deal. I mean, if you find somebody who's still in business after 10 years, you've met a ninja. You've met a ninja statistically. You've met a ninja.
That's right. That's right. I tell people all the time, especially the online space, when I tell people how long I've been online, when you start approaching the 10-year mark in internet marketing, I mean, that's dinosaur. That's dinosaur years on the internet. People come and go in the internet space.
Absolutely.
You're talking about the business of speaking right now, and I know time is really upon us, but you've really talked about laying the groundwork. Now, for anybody interested in getting into this business of speaking, as I mentioned earlier, you do coaching and consulting, and you even host your own events in the beautiful state of Florida, which I got to get down there and partake in.
Can't wait.
Yeah, got to do that. Now, this business, how can one, now you obviously tapped into your gift early. Now, you have someone now who's thinking about going into this arena of speaking as a business. How should they begin that? What should be the first steps that they should take to try to enter into the business of speaking?
Thank you so much, man, for that question. That's a powerful question. And I believe this. I believe that there is an art to everything and a business to everything. And I believe it's vitally important that whatever industry you want to go into, that you master your craft or your art first, and then you master the business behind it. So I believe that, and this is truly true of my life, the reason why I'm successful in the speaking business is because I've spent years and years cultivating the art or the craft of speaking. So one of the things that if you visit my website, delatoro.com, D-E-L-A-T-O-R-O.com, and you click on my resources page or my store page, one of the resources that we have available is a program called Presenting Your Way to Greatness. And it's a home study course on presentation skills. So if you're wanting to kind of get a jump start on developing your presentation skills and your speaking skills, because in my humble opinion, I think speaking and presentation skills are easily the two of the strongest skills that you can have in any industry. If you can be the person in any industry who can stand up and give the talk, the sales presentation, the summary of the meeting, the recap, moderate, MC, host, you know, if you could be the person that get on the microphone and do that, public speaking is still the number one fear in America and Canada. So if you could be the one person to be able to present, that's a huge deal, an enormous deal. So I do. I work with people who want to get into the business of speaking and developing their craft, et cetera, et cetera. And I have an event that I do called Crush the Stage. So if you're listening and you want to develop your speaking skills and you want to work with me live, I think home study courses and books are great, but there's nothing more powerful than a live event or a live experience. I would encourage you to come and spend 2 days with me and let me groom you in the area of developing your speaking and presentation skills, regardless of your industry. I don't care if you're in real estate, insurance, financial services, ministry. It doesn't matter. Politics. It doesn't matter what your industry is, academia, whatever it is, entrepreneurship, internet marketing, whatever. You're going to need presentation skills and public speaking skills in order to advance your business, no matter what your business is, no matter what your industry is. So I would invite you to visit Crush the Stage, like you're crushing ice, crushthestage15.com. That's crushthestage15.com to learn about our event that we do with a 2-day presentation skills mastery course that we do live. And we've got one coming up in April in Maryland that I would love to invite all of our listeners to be a part of. It's an absolutely epic experience where I'm going to be coaching you and grooming you directly on how to develop those platform skills, because I believe, again, if you want to develop in a business, you have to put your craft together first. And I want to say this as a quick footnote, Brother Bedford. I see nowadays, because outsourcing has become so economical, I see a lot of people put their energy into the icing of their business, but they don't put enough energy into the actual cake.
I like that.
And what I mean is, you know, It's graphic design, book publishing, article generation, lead generation. All these things are now, you know, social media, you know, headers and Twitter, you know, backgrounds. All that stuff is so cheap now.
Right.
It's so inexpensive that anybody can do it. Anybody, you can buy a professional look that your gifting cannot support. And I see a lot of people who have great social media presence and who have great icing, but their developed skill is very poor.
Right.
And at the end of the day, it doesn't make sense to put top quality graphic design or branding and marketing on stale donuts. You want to have a polished product first. And so if you're on this line and you're saying, Del, you've been resonating with me, man. I've been following you. I've been studying you. I've Googled you. You've done movies. You've done television. You've done infomercials. You have your own conference. You speak all around the world. You're one of the top speakers in the world. I'm the youngest CSP, the certified speaking professional, youngest CSP in the world. I earned that designation at age 33. I'm in the top 7% of paid speakers worldwide. You know, I mean, this stuff didn't happen overnight. It didn't come without challenges. But if you're saying, Del, I'm resonating with you, bro, what you're talking about makes sense to me, then come work with me. We've got a few spots left for crushthestage15.com. So check that out. If you can't make that event for whatever reason, we've got payment plans available on there. But if you can't make that event, at least go to our website, deltoro.com, and pick up Presenting Your Way to Greatness. It's a great home study course to help you develop your presentation skills. Get involved in a good Toastmasters club in your local community that will help you cultivate and grow your speaking gifts and talent. Also visit callopportunitydreamingajob.com so that way you can purchase that resource to help you transition out of your 9-to-5 into your entrepreneurial dream smartly, so that way you can do it sound and you can actually make the transition effectively instead of kind of running into a lot of roadblocks. Find a good mentor, someone that you can learn from who's not going to tell you everything that you want to hear, but they're going to tell you everything that you need to hear. And be willing at any age, listen to me as I close out, at any age, be willing to be Danielson. Every great teacher knows when they are the student.
Wow.
And at any season of your life, when I'm not on stage, you know where I'm at? I'm on the front row listening to another amazing presenter, learning from them, gleaning from them,
right,
and developing myself. You know, people say, oh, you know, Del, when you're not on stage, what do? Well, it's very easy. When you're not on stage, you're all about the business of getting back on stage or developing everything that you just did on stage.
Right.
So, you know, but when I'm at an event, once I'm done speaking, I'm sitting supporting other speakers,
right,
encouraging them, helping them at their product tables, helping them with crowd control, you know, just paying it forward to other experts because we're in this space together. So if you're on this call and what I've shared with you has resonated with you and you think that I'm one of those voices that you can trust and I'm one of those teachers that's shown up in your life, I would love for you to take the next best step, which is to come meet me live at any of my events. You can Google me, all of my events and the projects show up, but I've mentioned several of them already, crushthestage15.com, caughtbetweenadreamandajob.com, deltoro.com, crushuniversity.com. Is another website that's our educational brand where we speak at colleges and universities all across the world. So we've got several brands that we run. The Full Throttle Experience.com is our conference, our annual conference. We're putting our 2016 conference together right now. So just incredible things that we've got going on. So we would love to have you as a part of our brand and learn more about what we do. And Brother Bedford, it's been a tremendous honor and a joy to partner with you and to add value to the countless lives that I know that your incredible broadcast reaches and trains, coaches, and equips. So thank you so much for this opportunity, sir.
Man, no, thank you, Delator. As I mentioned from the onset, this has been one of the most anticipated conversations that I wanted to have, and it's for that reason. I mean, just the giving nature that you have, the way that you lend not only just your support, but just the resources. And I love the analogy. You are truly one who works on mastering his craft. And so that's always stood out to me. And so to have you on here and really give your testimony as to not just the process, your journey as an entrepreneur, but really the behind the scenes on what you do to master your craft, man, is just phenomenal, and it's absolutely necessary, especially in an era where we have so much competition, global competition.
Yes.
Mediocre today. So I really thoroughly enjoyed you taking the approach, the work ethic, the things that you the cake analogy. I'm going to take that one because no one can enjoy an uncooked cake. I don't care how pretty it looks. You can't enjoy
how pretty it looks.
Okay.
So as soon as you cut into that sucker, man, as soon as you cut into that thing, it's like you can forget it.
Yeah, it's a wrap. It's a wrap, man. So no, you've been man, more than a joy. I mean, I could talk to you forever and really glean from you. And I'm sure the audience as well. We're going to push all of those websites again out, those links. That's delatoro.com. We definitely want to make sure everybody goes. That's the hub to get information. Crushthestage15.com. That's coming up soon. So we want to make sure that everyone who's listening, go and take a look at it and see if it's for you. Try it on and see if it fits. There is no better teacher right now in this current generation as it relates to presentation skills and public speaking. We have some greats. We have some giants. You've listened to them, Willie Jolly, Les Brown. We brought them to you, Della Toro mentioned. But as it relates to what's current and fresh, I encourage you all to visit crushthestage15.com, delatoro.com, and, of course, Caught Between a Dream and a Job.
A Dream and a Job.
That's the classic. We want to make sure that we push those out and get those out throughout the year because those are tools and resources that are absolutely vital to your success. So, man, thank you. Any closing words that you would like to say to the listening audience as we get ready to close out?
Well, again, I just want to encourage everyone that's listening to please continue to listen, and glean from, and support Brother Bedford and this incredible broadcast of bringing millionaire entrepreneurs to the forefront. And I just want to encourage you, whatever Brother Bedford's got going on, support this man, this amazing entrepreneur who has taken it on as his mission to make sure that he brings the best to you. Continue to pray for him, stand behind him, attend his events. Make sure that you are a customer of his. Online, internet marketing, website development, product development, funnels, et cetera, et cetera. This is an incredible, brilliant business mind who's known around the world for his expertise. And I'm excited about being a new customer, and I'm excited about being a part of his stable and his team, and et cetera, and just the camaraderie and relationship that we've developed over the years. So I would encourage everybody that's listening, continue to pour into the gentleman that constantly brings the best to you, because you wouldn't be listening if Brother Bedford did not create this platform. You might have heard about me in other ways and arenas, but hearing me today, right now, is credited to this gentleman's persistence and diligence, tracking me down, sending me emails, text messages, staying on top of me. And so, brother, I appreciate you. So in closing, I just want to, you know, again, you know, shine the light back on the creator of this work, which is yourself, and just honor you for your due diligence. And I just want to encourage everybody out there to continue to support the voice that you trust that's brought you incredible gifts and talents, and continue to put your arms around him as he continues to put his arms around this vision that God has given him. So thank you, brother. I appreciate you.
Man, thank you so much. I really do appreciate that. And there you have it. And so, I appreciate Della Toro McNeil for being with us today. And, of course, we appreciate you. Again, share, subscribe, encourage your family and friends to listen to this vital and important message that could help them to start, grow, and to maintain their own businesses. So this is Brother Bedford, and joining me today has been Della Toro McNeil, and we look forward to speaking to you all again very, very soon. Take care, everyone, and thank you again, Della Toro. I'll talk to you soon.
Yes, sir. Thank you, buddy. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to my conversations with Black millionaire entrepreneurs. And if you want more tips, more strategies, more notifications that would really take you into the mindset of these brilliant Black millionaire entrepreneurs, I need you to take out your phone and text my brother, that's the keyword, my brother, to 58885. Just text the keyword, my brother, to 58885. Or if you prefer, you can go online and just go to blackmillionairemindset.com. And once you enter your name and your email, I will immediately send you my video training, 10 Keys to Unlock Your Own Millionaire Mindset. So again, you can go to blackmillionairemindset.com, enter your name and email, and I'll send you the video training, or you can text the keyword, my brother, to 58885, and I'll make sure that you get the video training. This is your brother Bedford, and I look forward to seeing you and hearing from you in the next Conversations with Black Millionaire Entrepreneurs. Take care.